Hello and welcome. My name is Kevin Entwistle. I will be your host today on Your Story is Our Story. I have a very good friend of mine on the show today from Boston, and not only is she a Forbes 30 under 30, she's coming off of a year of raising over $2 million in capital and securing first place in the pitch competition run by Sound Ventures, a firm founded by Ashton Kutcher and Guy O'Siri. The 100K competition prize quickly turned into 400K from Kutcher and Salesforce founder Mark Benioff. Don't have your attention yet? Then let's get into the lineup for today's show. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. And if you've heard a few episodes by now, thank you so much for your continued support. Today, Rebecca and I are going to challenge you to take a stance on your own financial wellness. As the co-founder of LearnLux, Rebecca is going to share with us why thousands of young adult professionals are visiting her website, where the fintech and gig economy are headed, and how LearnLux is creating quick learn experiences. By the way, Rebecca is going to let us in on her up-close and personal experience with Mark and Ashton. But for now, you know the drill. Let's get to welcoming Rebecca Liebman, co-founder of LearnLux, to our show today. Rebecca, we are so glad to have you here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're so welcome, and congratulations on all of your recent recognition.
Oh, thank you so much.
Where did this roadway start for you?
The company's kind of a long time coming. I always think back to when I was a kid, and I was always getting yelled at for doing arts and crafts projects differently than everyone else, or school projects differently than everyone else. And all my teachers would say, you know, you're supposed to follow the rules and come out with this end product. And I always think about my life today. I was given the same materials as everyone else, but always seemed to come up with a different end result.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up outside Hartford, Connecticut.
And through school, you started to find these unique ways about you that you wanted to be more creative or maybe break the rules a little bit. How did this translate further on in your life when you went to school, maybe in college, or afterwards you got started in the startup world?
Yeah, I definitely was always breaking the rules, but I didn't think I was going to run a company. And maybe that's because entrepreneurship has changed so much in the last couple of years, and even who can be an entrepreneur and who's successful in the space. But I think, you know, being in college, I went to school for environmental science. I had really loved environmental science when I was in high school. And I went to school specifically because I thought I would change environmental policy. And after 1 year, I had the opportunity to move to Kenya. And so I left school for a little while and I moved to Kenya to do environmental work. But I ended up being there at a really interesting time where this financial technology called M-Pesa was taking off, mobile payments, and kind of hopped on that wagon of there's just so much early adoption of mobile payments, and really was able to immerse myself in financial technology. Ultimately, you know, long story in between, but how I got into the space today.
And what specifically did you find out about yourself?
Living in Kenya, this is actually interesting because this doesn't come up that often, but I moved to Kenya when I was 19 years old by myself, and I was living with a host family. And I think I was kind of starry-eyed. I thought I was going to change the world. You move across the world and you just realize you actually can't change the world. Like, it's so different. Everyone grows up in this microcosm where you think you understand things and you think you understand people, and you go thousands of miles away and a culture is completely different and what people value is completely different. And it really let me understand that you can create a small impact in one area that can have a ripple effect, almost the idea of, you know, thinking locally and acting globally. So I think, one, it just kind of helped me better understand how you actually can think about scale within a company. You can't do everything at once. And the second thing was I was put into such a unique situation so early in life that it really changed my entire mindset moving forward. Just living in a place where there's no running water, no electricity, it changed how I thought about humans and what they value.
And how do you think about humans and what they value today? You said entrepreneurship has changed. You've had some experiences. You're very creative. How is this evolving today?
The entrepreneurial landscape. So what's interesting, just going back to Kenya quickly, is in Kenya, everything is an informal economy. Every single person is an entrepreneur. Everyone is selling tomatoes or fish or vegetables in the market. But it's all these informal businesses that are never recognized by the GDP. Like, they're never formalized in the economy. So it's really fascinating. So when I came back to the States, I started working at a lab at MIT. I was learning a lot around trends and tendencies in finance. And I think having that exposure to see that anyone can be an entrepreneur, anyone can start a business, when I recognized this problem in my research at the lab at MIT, I thought, I've already seen that anyone can really start a company. And so I think it did open up my eyes to what an entrepreneur could be. And then I just in America, the definition of entrepreneurship has changed tremendously even since then in the last 5 years.
And so with this idea of entrepreneurship, you've evolved yourself over the years and you founded this financial literacy curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you always good with money? How did this idea come to fruition?
I wish you could all see my face right now, but no, I was never really good with money. And that's one of the biggest pieces of the story that sometimes gets left out, but money is interesting. It's very behavioral. And right now in financial services, large institutions have made it very mechanic. And I think what I try to do every day is change people's relationship with money. And a lot of that is through products, but through language as well. People take these really interesting behaviors that they saw growing up and either mimic that or do the exact opposite. And so much of how you think about money comes from these inherent biases that we don't even realize we have. And so a lot of what I think about running LearnLux is just how to change people's relationship with money. And that kind of is the start of it all.
And in relationship to what you said about Kenya too, sometimes there's different languages around different topics, different cultures. Is this something that money has an effect on us as well? Like some societies handle it differently or the way they feel about it. You speak of behavioral characteristics.
Yeah. In many, many ways, different geographies in general think about money very differently. Obviously, there's different currencies and there's different behaviors passed on. But even in the States, I mean, you can grow up 15 minutes away from someone, 5 minutes away from someone who thinks very, very differently about money just because of the small nuances they saw and that they kind of picked up on without even knowing. And so I think that's really fascinating. But then language in general, a lot of language in finance was kind of created to be very competitive and hyper-masculine. And I think for a long time, that left women out of the conversation. And we're starting to see incumbent financial institutions recognize that it's an issue. There hasn't been much changed yet, but the conversation is starting around, you know, mass America isn't who financial services was made for traditionally. And so how do we kind of scale financial services to more and more people and give more people access?
And why should we be talking about financial literacy?
Yeah. I saw a really interesting article the other day, and it was kind of trying to play devil's advocate to the idea of financial wellness. It was saying, you know, do companies really need to offer their employees financial wellness, or should they just be paying them more? I thought about it. I'm like, that is an interesting question. Should companies just be paying their employees more, or should they offer them financial wellness? And what's interesting is that if someone just gets paid more and they have bad habits, that doesn't change their bad habits. They'll just make those habits, but with more money. They'll have the bad habits with more money.
Larger scale.
Yeah, larger scale. And so, you know, you think about financial literacy and financial wellness and education, and it's not even necessarily about how much money you make. It's really about those initial habits that you build and the behaviors that you build around finance. And you can see people that don't make a lot of money have amazing behaviors, and you can see people who make a lot of money not able to manage it. And I think starting the company out of the lab at MIT was really funny for me because I was working with brilliant PhD students who, you know, knew so much about this industry but couldn't figure out how to open a retirement account. And it just shows that theory is very different than practice in financial services. And closing that gap will be really instrumental in the next wave of companies that are successful.
And who is using your curriculum? Is it just those at MIT? Is it adults? Is it people in college? Who do you want to be using?
Yeah, so let me kind of jump back. I can give you high level what we do. But LearnLux is a financial wellness company. And what I would say we do is digital financial education and planning for the 90% of Americans who don't need or have a human advisor because the economics would never make sense for them. and we distribute through companies. So employers can buy the product for their employees to help them with all of their decisions from credit, investing, retirement, healthcare, insurance, the range, your holistic financial picture. And so I would say that kind of covers like the general idea of who uses the product. It's typically people who are just not sure where to start, but know they need to do something. And we can give them that roadmap for how to be successful and how to think about what we call their financial hierarchy of needs. Where should you start and where should you go after that?
And how did you guys begin building your content with this in mind?
Yeah, there's three components to the product. I call it learn, plan, and act. So learn is really this interactive content, like two to three minute interactive experiences where you're learning, but you're also answering questions that customizes the content to your life. So that if the two of us were going through the product, we would have different experiences because we live different lives. And creating the content is actually a massive undertaking. We have an in-house content team, people who studied educational pedagogy, how people learn, along with CFPs, people with financial backgrounds, to really take the information and break it down into a way that someone can understand.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit too. I think that's a great point. This idea of quick learn experiences, and aside from that, what you just spoke about is this language and communication skills and ways that people learn. How are you guys trying to bridge that difference between maybe the way somebody feels about money? How do they get involved if it's such an overwhelming task to just begin? How do you use these quick learning experiences to do just that?
Yeah, and that is the problem. It seems so overwhelming, so daunting, these massive decisions that affect your life. And if you make the wrong decision, you're making a really bad decision potentially that could have massive impacts later on. And so for us, it's let's just get started with the basics. Here are a couple things that everyone should have, and let's check those initial boxes. And then from there, we kind of move up the list into things that are more specific for everyone. And I think the reason that there are multiple components of the product is because people do learn and take in information in different ways. So there are a lot of people who, you know, are kind of like do-it-yourselfers. They want to learn. They want to understand. Even if they have someone helping them, they want to know why their money is being allocated in a certain way. So that's kind of the learn component. Then we have the plan component. So if you just want to make, I shouldn't say just, it's if you want to make an entire kind of financial plan for yourself and look at what does the roadmap look like now and in the future, we kind of let you do that in a fun digital way where you can do it at your own pace. You don't have to feel embarrassed about what you don't know. You can learn along the way. But look at what other people have done to make a successful plan. And then the third component is acting around kind of what the plan that you just put together. And sometimes that involves us connecting you with a person to talk to and really validate that you're on the right track. And so I think having those three components, it captures a large audience so that no matter how you learn and take in information, you can make a plan here.
And personal finance is just that, extremely personal. Is this a way to start opening up and having real discussions with yourself? At what point are people saying to themselves, okay, I need to take accountability?
Yes. In my ideal world, in my dreams, we can change the way people talk about finance and change the scariness of the industry. I think we're getting there slowly, but it is such a scary thing for people because it seems like a lot. I think there's kind of like a certain age where people start to realize, like, I need to be doing something. Let's get real. And it could be a certain life event that happens, and it could just be, you know, some crazy awakening that they have. And many times that will prompt a decision. However, that could already be too late potentially. A lot of people make financial decisions reactively. And so the way that I really try to start the conversation with people is preemptively. The same way that you get a checkup at the doctor before something happens is how I think about our product, a financial checkup. So you want to get things looked at ahead of time instead of waiting until it's too late to have the conversation. So hopefully we can kind of start to move that conversation forward.
And let's talk about competitors here in the fintech space. What are the potential problems with integrating the old with the new? So in a sense, we're scaffolding on maybe issues that we already have. Are we using technology to take this in an entirely different way of doing business and way of thinking about your money, or is this supposed to be somewhat of a complement to the old ways?
Yeah, our product specifically. It's a fascinating question. I think there are trends where there are certain companies that are really wanting to partner, and there are certain companies that are really wanting to just surpass incumbent institutions. For us, we've always said, you know, let's let financial services do what they're good at, and we can come in and help people who aren't being served by them. And so the thing about finance is it's such a massive market. There will always have to be many, many products and many, many solutions. You can help millions of people just in specific niches. So, you know, one company can exist and serve a very specific group of people, and LearnLux or any other financial product could still exist and serve another very specific group of people. I think the problem is right now most people aren't being served by the banks that exist. And so there's an interesting opportunity to come in and fill that gap.
Well, let's talk about entry points here. Someone who has no yet understanding of their 401k or does their company match versus somebody who is the do-it-yourself, is maxing out their 401k, has some pretty good habits in place already. Who are you guys most wanting to work with? Is it both types of people?
It's probably more of the novice investor right now. I would say, you know, it's more of, I know I need to do something, I'm not sure where to start, and really getting you on that track. If you're over a certain asset amount, you're probably already working with someone or, you know, have things in a row. Even if you're stressed about money, you're probably, you know, doing something. So we're working with more of a novice investor. However, I have conversations daily with people who work with the other group that you said, people who are making all the right decisions. And I think there's probably still a market in there to serve. It just hasn't been where we are right now.
Let's talk about that then too. What would you see, I don't want to use the word five-year plan.
Yeah.
But what do you see in your future? Like, what are operations going to expand to offer other products? Will it be not just learn, plan, and act? Will it be more to the act piece? We're curious.
I want to grow a massive business. So I think yes and to all of that. And like I said, you know, there's a lot happening in fintech, especially you're in New York. And I still think it's the first wave. People say there's so much in fintech, it's crowded. It's not at all. There's so much that needs to be changed in financial services right now. I could give you a list of like 50 ideas that I don't have time to pursue, but that you find just from talking to customers. And so I really think we're just in the first wave. And I think we're learning from our early users, from our early customers, what areas we want to explore into more. But in 5 years, I think that financial wellness will be just as ubiquitous as healthcare and companies. The way that you join a company and you're typically given some form of healthcare to help your family, you'll be given some type of financial wellness product to help your family in that capacity and to start getting on the right track.
Give somebody an idea who might be listening to this and thinking this could be for me. They're on their fence about it. What is that feeling? Because I know you've had it just through success of your own company, through taking accountability of your own finances. What is that feeling when you finally start to become more independent about your finances? The calmness, the focus, explain that, like describe that feeling.
That's a super interesting question because I do feel like even the last year or 2 years alone, I've managed to get my finances on track so much more than ever before, and partially because I was running an early stage company and now things are much more aligned. It does have a sense of relief and you kind of have a sense of confidence around your finances, which allows you to have more capacity to do other things. But I think it's a long game. Like, there's always decisions that you make on a daily basis. And I wonder if there's even a perfect. Like, I don't think there is a perfect. I think it's just a set of behaviors that you just keep practicing and implementing to try and get on the right path. Again, finance is so personal. And I came to the space with a lot of behaviors that I picked up from my family growing up. And I really wanted to change those. And so I think for me, it's just an everlasting, you know, path of changing.
And I just want to take a few minutes to get into entrepreneurship, maybe a couple bits of advice from you. But
yeah,
in startups, there's, you know, we read a lot about female representation and that sort of thing. And it can mean different things to certain people, but we would be very appreciative and curious to hear your own thoughts on your personal experience and how that's been.
So I have a lot of thoughts on women and entrepreneurship, obviously. Maybe not obviously, but if you if you've read anything that I write. I think the biggest issue right now, or the biggest challenge, is that there isn't enough pattern recognition for women being successful. We've seen the same type of person run large businesses for a long, long time. And you can look at statistics. You can also hear thousands of anecdotes for how this is true. And so really my goal, and the reason part of the reason I want to build a massive company, is because people just need to see the pattern recognition. You need to be able to see more and more people build companies that don't look like the person who's done it for the last 50-100 years. And it's a process. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're starting to have some early wins, obviously seeing a lot of women take companies public, a lot of women get hundreds of millions of dollars in funding and growing large businesses. But that's what we need. We need more people to see women pitching, more people to see women, you know, having success. And then from there, we'll be able to start to change the recognition.
And I couldn't agree more. I would say, taking it a step further too, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on the female difference between males and females taking ownership of their own personal finances. Because what we're seeing in certain surveys is that you would think to this day that more females are taking ownership of their personal finances, less of like starting companies and being very successful in their careers. And we're hoping that that trend changes, but maybe certainly LearnLux can help in that cause as well. But what are you seeing in terms of that demographic as well with their personal finances?
Yeah, I think it goes back to a documentary that came out a while ago called Misrepresentation. And there's a quote that has lingered with me and many others who saw it. And it says, "You can't be what you can't see." I think that goes for women entrepreneurs and also women managing their own finances, you know. So it is an interesting place. My co-founder and I talk about it all the time. You know, he's a guy, I'm not. So we talk about how we think about it differently. And obviously that doesn't scale because not everyone's just like us, but the gender difference in finance is fascinating around personal finances and just people's level of confidence. We've done some tests just with around gender, how confident people feel. Men tend to feel more confident even if they have no idea what they're doing. Women tend to feel less confident even if they are on the right track. And so I do wonder what that is and how we kind of change that conversation and those metrics.
Well, I just want to pause and say thank you for all the work that you're doing with your company. People are seeing you, and it's really an incredible thing that you're doing, and as well as your co-founder. So keep up the great work. We're looking forward to seeing everything you continue to do. But I would like to also ask, we talked about your Sound Ventures pitch.
Yes.
Take us through that day.
Pitch.
What was it like meeting Ashton and Mark?
This might be the first time this is revealed. Not sure. You get the info. This was a crazy experience. So I was one of five companies chosen to pitch at this event at South by Southwest with Sound and amazing judges. So I'd already kind of, they've been through hundreds of people, and there were five of us. We showed up that day and I met all the other founders, and everyone was incredibly impressive. Like, they definitely had a very good model for picking. And at first I was just thinking, you know, I'm so lucky to be able to pitch in front of these people. Who would ever get 8 minutes to talk to this many famous people at once? I was like, I'll just take it as a great opportunity to be able to talk to them. And then I talked to Michael, my co-founder. And he was like, "Why are you going to do this if you're not going to win?" And I was like, "Damn it, you're right." And I'm pretty competitive, but I was just not trying to put a lot of pressure on myself. And after talking to him, I was like, okay, maybe I'll win. Maybe I'll like try to win. I have pitched at other events before, so I have kind of a process and I'm used to pitching in front of people. So that doesn't really scare me. It was more that like the day of, you realize that you're pitching in front of really incredible people and kind of just black out anyway during the whole thing. But yeah, I would say the night before I was pretty nervous. The day of, I just had a lot of adrenaline, so I was like really excited. And then right before, I was backstage at the event and I felt like, you know, like you're so nervous, like I felt like I had something in my eye and something in my throat, and I was like, like I'm not gonna be able to talk, yeah. And then I went out on stage and it just came out, you know, like I had practiced the pitch that I wanted to give and it came out. We only had 2 minutes. Then the judges asked questions for a long time. They were, you know, asked really good questions, and then there was just a pause. They said they're going to break for like 15 minutes. They ended up breaking for like 1 minute. like everyone kind of dispersed and they were like, actually, we're starting again. And they came out and they just said, you know, it was a unanimous decision. We all voted for LearnLux. And I was like, this is crazy. So that's kind of a summation of the day. And then I went into press for a lot of hours with everyone.
Do you remember getting your feeling back?
No, I don't think I had feeling for like a week. I'm not really sure. It doesn't seem real, but it also is a lot of work that goes into something like that that no one ever really sees behind the scenes. Like, it's not like you just show up and pitch. If you're doing a 2-minute pitch, there's a lot of condensing. Like, what message do you want to say in just 2 minutes that gives the right amount of detail but doesn't bore people? And I had looked up all the judges' backgrounds and knew if they knew about fintech, if they didn't, so I could specifically answer their questions in a way that would make sense for them.
Kind of like LearnLux stuff.
Exactly. I knew that some of them really knew about fintech. Some of them were like, eh, it's interesting, but I know nothing about it. So I wanted to kind of make sure that I was ready for all of their experiences and what their questions would be. And I just practiced that for a long time. I walked around Austin, Texas, practicing what I thought their questions could be based on their knowledge. Yeah, so a lot went into it.
Well, I encourage you to remember that day, that time with them. It's just one more step in your long journey. So
exactly.
And did you do anything to celebrate with them? Did they send you on your way with a check and said, good luck?
Yeah, it was such a massive check that it does not fit on the plane. I mean, there was a lot of celebrating. That night, they had a huge party at South By, which was really fun. And you can imagine the people who were there. So that was a nice celebration.
Have you been back there since, to Southwest?
Yeah, I went back to South By this year, but they didn't do a pitch competition this year. Okay. They said they would let me be the reigning champ for 2 years.
That's crazy. And I'll just wrap up on the ventures piece, but are there any more pitches that you're doing now? Who are you speaking to?
Yeah, I'm not really doing pitch competitions anymore. I kind of want to end on a high note, and I feel like that's as good as it can get, is quadrupling your winnings and, you know, getting a round done. So not really doing any more pitch competitions, but, you know, my job as CEO is always pitching. I'm recruiting the best employees. I'm recruiting the best investors. And so I'm always, you know, honing in on what's the story I want to tell, what resonates with people, and how do we build a massive company?
And just for a few personal questions, we always end on
these. Ooh, okay.
The type of leadership that you subscribe to, how do you want to be perceived as a leader?
That's a fascinating question. I think, how do I want to be perceived as a leader? I would love to be candid yet respected. That is what I aim to be. And to be really honest, I haven't found too many people who can pull it off. But as our company grows, it's fascinating to think about what type of leader you want to be at every stage of the company. I want to stay candid with everyone and be highly respected at the same time.
Always chasing the better you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about personal heroes throughout your life?
This is so bad. We always joke at our company, don't meet your heroes.
Don't meet your heroes?
Don't meet your heroes,
don't
because
meet your heroes.
People sometimes seem better than they are in real life, which I don't want to end on a jaded note, but I don't have a specific person. I think, honestly, from my experience in Kenya, something I learned is just learning from everyone. I love to talk to every person and just see if I can pick up something. And it might not be who you expect you learn the most from, but you end up taking away a lot.
I have a feeling I already know the answer to this question, but if you weren't doing your current job, what would you be doing?
What do you think my answer is?
Doing your current job.
Oh, so for a long time, I said I have no idea what else I would do. I think it, like, I'm so compelled to do this. This is what I want to do. If I wasn't doing this and I had to pick something, I would sail around the world and measure plastic in the ocean and do like an environmental report.
Very admirable. Leaving one message for your listeners.
Okay.
Thinking about starting their own company or initiative or interested in learning more about their own personal finances or even LearnLux. What would you leave them with?
Something that I like to tell people frequently is when I was starting the company, everyone told me not to do it. They said, you're too young, you don't have any experience, you know, you don't have time, you're in school, you don't have money. I was in debt from going to school. And something that I tell myself all the time is that if you wait until you're ready, you'll be waiting for the rest of your life. I think you can make a lot of excuses every day, every month, every year. And if I would have listened to everyone, then I might not be here today. If you really want to do something and there's really a problem that you can't stop thinking about, then, you know, there's never a right time. It's just now.
Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
And thank you so much for being here, Rebecca. We're so grateful that you could join us.
Thanks, Kevin.
And thank you all for listening. It's been a pleasure having you join us. And thanks for tuning into this episode. If you enjoyed our speaker, feel free to give her a compliment or leave a comment on our page to show support. If you are interested in learning more, you can find Rebecca at learnlux.com or view her features in CNBC, Forbes, Huffington Post, and the New York Times. Money is just a tool, so please do not hesitate to reach out with your own questions and concerns. Rebecca, as well as myself, are always looking for ways to strengthen your interest in your personal finances. Have a great day, and we will be back with more entrepreneurs and philanthropists soon. Take care.